Welcome to Insights from Beyond. I'm David Abramson, and our show is on Judaism in the New Age here on WLIR. We have a special guest tonight, Mr. Richard Cowan, National Director of the Group Normal, National Organization of the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And especially in the light of some of today's news, we thought it was particularly a good topic, and Mr. Cowan was somehow available. He has quite a busy schedule. He does a lot of work in the media, and besides his own lobby group that he's with in Washington, somehow was able to make himself available to be a guest on our show. And it's quite a somewhat of a controversial subject, to say the least. If anyone feels that it's not something that they want someone to be listening to, then you should be advised that the topic matter might be somewhat sensitive. But it's a pertinent issue, and a lot of people feel that the laws in this country dealing with marijuana and some of the other substances that are now not legal are, you know, in parallel to terms of the prohibition back in the 20s, and that with legalization that we would take a lot of the cases out of the courts, and there would, the tax monies could be raised to work on rehabilitation and other types of good for the community, rather than having this money go to the mafia and others who are just promoting these things illegally. We'll be back after a short break, and Mr. Cowan is on the line now. If anyone has any questions or wants to, say something, on the show, you might have that opportunity if you want to call in. Number is 627-1300. We'll be right back. Back to Insights from Beyond. I'm David Abramson. Our theme is Judaism and the New Age, and tonight's topic is the consideration for reform of some of the marijuana and possibly other substances. Although I think Mr. Cowan will tell us that is not his specialty totally, just reform of marijuana laws. But let Mr. Cowan introduce himself and tell us something about his organization himself. Mr. Cowan, welcome to Insights from Beyond.
Thank you. Glad to be with you. You're right. The Normal really confines itself to dealing with the marijuana laws. We don't get involved in the subject of any of the other drug laws. There are obviously some overlaps in the problems and the enforcement of all of the various aspects of drug prohibition, but Normal confines itself to the marijuana laws. And you made the point earlier that there are parallels with prohibition in the 1920s, and that is true to a degree, in the sense that the prohibition of alcohol created a very large criminal organizations, and basically the mafia, as we call it in the United States, got its start in during alcohol prohibition. But there's a very important difference between the way the marijuana laws are enforced and the way alcohol prohibition was enforced, and that is that under alcohol prohibition, people were rarely arrested for the possession of alcohol. If you had alcohol in your own home, that the police almost never went into your home and arrested you. And if you even made bathtub gin, that wasn't really a focus of law enforcement. But in the United States, people, in fact, have their homes invaded by heavily armed police, if they have marijuana in it, and if they're suspected of growing it especially, and the police can seize your home if you have one marijuana seedling in it. And this is something I think in a way could be more readily compared with the particularly the early stages of fascism in Europe, because what you're using is laws on the basis of denigrating a minority and using that as a basis for seizing their property. And this, there are a lot of parallels between what we have in the United States today under prohibition and the development of fascism in Europe. And I think that this is something that really is not properly understood. It does have parallels with alcohol prohibition, but the parallels with fascism are really much more threatening to our individual liberty.
How did you get involved in this pursuit?
Well, more or less by accident. I've been involved with Normal. I've only been the national rector of Normal for a little over a year, but I've been involved with Normal for almost 21 years now, almost 22. That it really just came about by accident, finding out how the laws were being enforced, and you really. It's very hard to find out what's going on in this country by reading the media. The people who are, I know lots of people who are very well informed, who keep up with public affairs, that are good citizens in every way, and that haven't the vaguest idea of what's going on in marijuana law enforcement. A lot of people think, oh, no one's arrested for marijuana possession. Wrong. We arrest an American every 2 minutes on a marijuana possession charge. We've arrested over 9 million Americans since the mid-60s on marijuana charges. And people lose their homes. People end up with getting very long sentences. And, you know, I just found out about this more or less by accident. And when I did, I thought, well, this can't last. And in 1972, I wrote an article that was published in Bill Buckley's National Review on why conservatives should support the legalization of marijuana. And I was just very, at the time, I said, you know, 5 or 10 years at the absolute outside, this thing will be over with. Well, you know, wrong 20 years later. It really is, you know, something that you will, that the average American will not find out about by reading the New York Times or watching, you know, the network news. It is simply not reported. This is something that goes on basically in secret. Most Americans don't know about the forfeiture laws. They don't know about mandatory minimums. They don't know how many people are being arrested. Most people think that, for example, that if you're sick, that, you know, surely that, you know, you can get marijuana medically. You can't. A doctor can write a prescription for morphine, but he can't write a prescription for marijuana. And so people with go through cancer chemotherapy. If they get it, they have to get it illegally. You know, people are being arrested who have really serious medical problems. I know people who've been put in prison who have serious medical problems. And the irony of it is that once they're put in prison, they're loaded up on opiates and tranquilizers and muscle relaxers and all kinds of different stuff, but to keep them from using marijuana. It's just the sort of thing that goes on that the average person is, you know, the average American would simply find abhorrent, and it isn't reported. And so I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia right now. I just got through speaking to the University of Virginia Law School to groups of students here, and they are, you know, this is something that, you know, that even law students quite often are very naive about in terms of what's going on. So I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
It's very fascinating, and I wondered how the organization also started, and what type of work it does in terms of, I know you're located in Washington. Are you working with? I imagine you must be working with all the political people that are in power to try to what type of reforms are if there are any. I hope there are. That are pending now or before Congress or the Senate?
Well, there are no laws, no bills pending as far as changing the laws on simple possession. I think that we are apt to see some improvement in the treatment of the mandatory minimums on marijuana. For example, that the law very arbitrarily right now says that if you have 49 marijuana plants, or if they're seedlings, that each of them is half a kilo. But if you have 50 of them, magically they all become a kilo. That's 2.2 pounds. Well, in point of fact, that is about 10 times about what you could get from a plant, but is arbitrarily set at that level. So that means that people who have 100 seedlings are subject to a 5-year mandatory minimum. And of course, like I say, they're subject to having their property seized, even if you have just one. So there's some improvement, I think, coming in the forfeiture laws this year as a result of both Supreme Court rulings and some pending legislation. I think that we will see a change in the mandatory minimums so that they are merely excessive as opposed to outrageous. I think that there's a good possibility that we will see something done in terms of making providing medical access to marijuana, particularly for people with AIDS. The administration is basically sort of tiptoeing around this, trying to figure out a way to do it. And the polls show that the American people are overwhelmingly in favor of medical access to marijuana. It's just common sense. Like I say, if a doctor can write a prescription for morphine, he ought to be able to write a prescription for marijuana. So I think we're going to make progress there. But we do work with other organizations. There, of course, the American Civil Liberties Union, you can always count on them for involvement in something like this. There are other organizations here in Washington, the Drug Policy Foundation, which is headed up by Professor Arnold Treback of American University, and there are other groups that we work with around the country. So we're not alone in this, but Normal is, to answer your previous question, Normal was founded in 1970 by a young lawyer, and then it's been over the years up and down. We've been very successful in some states. We've gotten 11 states that have more or less decriminalized possession of very small quantities of marijuana. But in every state, of course, the federal law overrides. And so it's a situation, again, going back to the cultivation. If somebody doesn't want to deal with the underworld and tries to grow their own marijuana, they place their life and property in danger. And this is one of the stupider aspects of the law.
Mm-hmm. What about sacramental use? For instance, there was a big case, I believe, in the Supreme Court about 2 years ago by the Native, brought against the Native American Church for the use of psychedelic-type substances, for a sacramental use, ritual use, as part of their religion. I know the Agudas Yisroel, which is a national Orthodox group, was, had presented a friend of the court brief, surmises of the case, suggesting to that, and advocating also that the Supreme Court, continue to allow the church the use of these substances in their rituals and their religious practices.
Well, as a matter of fact, there has been, unfortunately, a lower court ruling that against the sacramental use of marijuana. There is actually perhaps the best known of the religious groups that use marijuana, ganja, they would call it, in the religious way, is the Zion Coptic Church, or the Rastafarians, and of Jamaica. And this is... this is not a new, it's not a new religion in the sense that it's not something that was founded in the last 5 or 10 years or in the 1960s. This is something that dates back in Jamaica to the 1920s. And these people use marijuana as a part of their religion. So they call it ganja. And Jamaican ganja is incredibly potent by American standards, and these people consume very, very large quantities of it. And this has two relevance to the American situation. One is that it is clearly, I mean, it is a clearly a legitimate religious use. It is a part of a well-established religion. But this has not been so far protected by the First Amendment. The second thing about it is that if you ever hear people, you know, say about the latest research on marijuana reveals that it affects, has this or that adverse physical effect, the Rastafarians of Jamaica consume so much extremely potent ganja that if the marijuana had any really serious adverse physical effects, these people would have all died off a long time ago. And in point of fact, they're quite healthy and they work hard and under, you know, the usual adverse circumstances of a poor tropical country. But no, unfortunately, I don't think that the marijuana laws are going to be overthrown by any kind of First Amendment protections.
I believe the organization you're with, Normal, does not advocate the use of marijuana or any other substances, but the actual, you know, the due process of law, you know, reform of the actual law. I mean,
right. We do not advocate the use of marijuana. In fact, we make very explicit statements as far as young people are concerned that young people shouldn't use it. And I think there's a really very simple common sense reason why young people shouldn't use any mind-altering drug. But we don't advocate that adults use it either. We have board members, we have staff members and so on who don't smoke, and that's fine. The idea that this is something that should only be of concern to pot smokers would be like saying that anti-Semitism should be only of concern to Jews, or that civil liberty should be only of concern to blacks, or whatever, everybody for himself, the point of fact is that it really is about freedom. And I think that one thing that particularly the Germans especially have learned the hard way in this century is that, for example, that anti-Semitism can be very dangerous to people who are not Jewish. And so I think that Americans quite often need to learn that that laws that seem to be aimed at other people, it's just aimed at them, can affect us. And in point of fact, for example, there's a guy named Donald Scott out at a 200-acre estate in Malibu, and there is considerable suspicion that the state wanted to seize his estate. It was adjacent to a state park, and they sent 43 heavily armed narcs into Mr. Scott's estate in the middle of the night, and he thought that they were being hijacked, and so he pulls a gun, and they shoot him dead. Well, they did this on the basis that they had a report that there was marijuana growing on the property. They didn't find a single seed. So, the fact of the matter is that laws that create police powers that can be abused are a threat to everyone, and not just their putative target. And this is something that everybody needs to be aware of, is that you say, oh, I'm not a pot smoker, I don't care about the marijuana laws. Well, that's just as dumb as saying, oh, I'm not Jewish, so I don't have to worry about the Nazis. That once people get power, they abuse it. And this power is being abused in the United States today.
In many ways, it does seem that it parallels the alcohol prohibition, other than what you mentioned before. What about one of my workers here with me is mentioning that I should say that if marijuana is so bad, why should it be legalized? And isn't it harmful? And I know that you did just touch on that just a while ago. And I also have a question in the opposite direction, and that is, I from a political point of view, of is the government seeking to protect us from ourselves with the prohibition of this substance and others as well? And would it be best to perhaps, how do you feel about having all of these illegal substances legalized and regulated, and whatever tax monies are gotten from them used for rehabilitation and counseling type programs? And also, we do have some quite a few callers online, so we can get to some callers also, perhaps.
Yeah, people, this is a subject that I generally find that when I talk do radio talk shows around the country, that people, there are a lot of people who do call in, because people feel very strongly about this issue on both sides of it. People have been heavily propagandized for 70 years about marijuana. On the general philosophical question, the idea of it's your body, you have a right to do whatever you want to with it, is something that, particularly when we have alcohol, which is really, by most measures, the most dangerous of commonly used drugs. It is far, far more dangerous by any measure than marijuana. For example, you cannot overdose on marijuana. You can irritate your respiratory system by smoking a lot of it, but if you eat it, you don't even do that.
I didn't want to get into the so much into the actual pros and cons of marijuana use
mm-hmm.
So much as I wanted to deal with, if we could, the more of the political and the legalistic aspects of it.
I understand that, but my point is simply that when you have made alcohol legal, then you get into the question of the morality or the hypocrisy of making other substances illegal, if particularly given that alcohol is such a toxic and dangerous and addictive drug. And that really is the point there.
I see. And also, normal is specifically set up for the reform of marijuana laws. What is your feeling about other substances, and why are they different, if you feel they are?
Well, say normal only takes position on the marijuana laws, but I don't have any difficulty defending that position, in the sense that that marijuana prohibition began in the United States at federal level in 1937 as a result of something that it was a complete and total fraud. I don't know whether you've ever seen, or your listeners have ever seen, a movie called Reefer Madness, but basically it portrayed people who were clean-cut, wholesome people, and they took a couple of puffs on a marijuana cigarette and became homicidal maniacs, committed suicide or committed rape, or became jazz musicians or something like that. And this was the way that marijuana prohibition was sold to the American people, because marijuana is in fact the hemp plant. It has been cultivated for thousands of years. It was grown in ancient Israel. It was used. They just recently found a tomb outside of Jerusalem in which a young woman who had died during childbirth had been using it, which we know it was used for to ease the pains of childbirth and speed up labor. So this is something that has been used for thousands of years, and it was mandatory to grow it at Jamestown. George Washington grew it at Mount Vernon. Thomas Jefferson grew it here at Monticello. And in the 1930s, it was put through the Congress as something called marijuana, and it was a flat lie. I mean, it wasn't an exaggeration. It wasn't an overstatement. It was a lie, because what they said that the effects of smoking hemp flowers was simply it turned you into a homicidal maniac, and it simply is not true.
Well, we don't want to understate some of the potential dangers in the use of marijuana either. I feel very strongly about not dealing with that aspect of the issue, but especially and almost essentially on the union of the legality. I guess that's why I posed the question the way I did, the way I see it. In a sense, I see almost an equanimity between some of the other different substances as well, in terms of, in essence, the government seems to be protecting us from ourselves, and that's. But I hear what you're saying also, in that there is a degree here of historical use that's different from some of the other substances that are out there. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, I you know, this is one of the problems that I have in dealing with this issue, is because that insofar as, for example, you take, I think, that even the prohibitionists would not defend reefer madness on the basis of the 1937 laws, but we get into the business of constantly of having new claims made about the deleterious effects of it. Well, we have never claimed that it's harmless. But on the other hand, when people are lying to justify arresting people, then we object to the lies they're telling, and then people say, well, then you're claiming it's harmless. Well, no, we're not claiming it's harmless. What we're saying is that this particular claim or that particular claim isn't true. And, you know, anything else that you get down to specific cases where people try to bring specific allegations. And so that if somebody says, you know, David's a cannibal, you say, no, you're saying that David's perfect? No. You know, this is a matter of getting down to specific cases about something or other, and yet not being in the position of advocating that, you know, saying that it's harmless or advocating its use, and we don't. And that is, you know, the effects of mind-altering drugs vary enormously from one individual to another. I know people who have tried marijuana who don't like it, who find its effects unpleasant. I know people who I think smoke too much pot. Though I think they'd be better off if they didn't smoke or smoke less. But, you know, they wouldn't be better off being in jail. They wouldn't be better off having their property seized or losing custody of their children and all the other things that can happen to them.
Right, and also the danger that's inherent in the way things are going in this country right now through illegal channels. There's no controls in terms of what chemicals might have been added or what type of other, you know, dangerous elements are involved in the manufacture, let alone the dangerous elements of the types of people or animals that are involved in distributing these drugs and where the money is going, of course. And I mean in Judaism we have a principle, you know, that the law of the land is the law also, and that's another issue. To work through channels, so to speak, but certainly it seems that these channels should be addressed. Maybe we can go to some callers.
Sure.
Okay. Hi, you're online.
Hi, I'm glad. I want to first of all congratulate you on your new show.
Thank you. Speak up though, real loud. Okay.
Hey, it sounds like it'll be really interesting, and I do want to point out. So you, of course, realize it, and your guest, you're speaking to a pretty conservative, sheltered audience here, and I think that it wasn't made clear at the beginning that one of the reasons people are advocating the legalization of marijuana use is for medicinal use. It seems to be very helpful for alleviating the pain of terminally ill patients, and it is really sad joke that the government doesn't allow use for that reason. I wanted to know if, and that's the point I think that Normal is expressing, not just the freedom or not just the issue of controlled substances, but in this case there seems to really be evidence that marijuana could be useful for terminally ill patients. I would like to know if that is the main thrust of Normal, or are you just pushing legalization of marijuana because you feel it is relatively innocuous as far as mind-altering drugs go?
Well, actually, right now, that is our primary focus, is on the medical access issue. And by the way, I want to recommend to your listeners a book called Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. It was written by Dr. Lester Grinspoon of Harvard Medical School. It's and published by Yale University Press. And it was published last May. And it has not been reviewed by a single major newspaper or magazine in the United States. It is disgraceful. This is a very important book. It's a very readable book, Marijuana, the Forbidden Medicine. And it goes through a wide range of illnesses. It's astonishing. Dr. Grinspoon is, I've talked to him many times about this, and he says he is himself amazed at the number of illnesses for which people get immediate symptomatic relief. We're not talking about, I want to emphasize here, we're not talking about, you know, touting this as some sort of miracle cure. It doesn't cure anything. But for people with cancer, for example, who are going through chemotherapy, there are prescription drugs that alleviate the nausea, but they are not effective for everyone. And they are also terribly expensive, and they take time to take effect. If a person is going through chemotherapy, obviously, and their nausea is quite often, they can't keep a pill down, but if you take, you know, just a couple of puffs on a marijuana cigarette, it stops the nausea for most people, and just immediate relief. For people with AIDS, I just came from this meeting this evening here in Charlottesville, and there's a fellow here that has AIDS, and he's been taking AZT, and it causes a lot of nausea. And he has found that he had really lost a lot of weight from not being able to eat, not wanting to eat. And a lot of people with AIDS literally starve to death. It's called a wasting syndrome. And for years, people who smoke marijuana joked about the munchies. It's an appetite stimulant. And so that it's no joke if you have some sort of disease like AIDS, that, you know, where you have a long, you know, condition for a long period of time where you have no appetite, because that is, you know, that aggravates whatever else is wrong with you. Just recently, outside of New York City, there a lady named Mildred Cates was arrested for growing marijuana for her son, who has multiple sclerosis. And two things about that: one is that he basically didn't have any appetite, and the other is that, for some strange reason, that marijuana is a very powerful antispasmodic, so that people who have spinal cord injuries or have MS and some other related diseases and disorders find that it alleviates their spasms. And so that I know people who have had MS who could not get, who couldn't walk, but once they'd smoked marijuana could get up and walk. And invariably all of these people, or most of them, have discovered this as a result of smoking pot for quote-unquote non-medical reasons, in the sense that they were depressed because of their illness, and so, well, you know, I smoked some pot, at least it'll cheer me up. Well, they found that they got symptomatic relief. And of course, now it is just, you know, a very well-known fact that about its use in cancer chemotherapy. Just recently, there was a letter to the editor of the New York Times from a fellow I know who's one of the senior editors of National Review, who had cancer and went through chemotherapy, and he smoked it for relief of cancer chemotherapy in one of the leading cancer hospitals in New York City. And he says, you know, it's just widespread there. It's, everybody knows it. The doctors know it. And yet the doctors can't prescribe it. So they'll tell their patients, you know, your prescription isn't working for you, smoke some pot.
I have two questions.
Before you go on, we have to take a quick break. We'll be right back, though. Can you hold on?
My call pool, and have a good night and good luck again.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for calling. Well, Mr. Cowan, you were speaking before about quite a few relevant issues as far as this goes. Medicinal use of marijuana, that is the main... the main aspect of what your, how your organization is approaching this issue, is that is what you mentioned.
Well, that is our main thrust right now, and I don't want to mislead you, though, that we were, frankly, when the organization was founded, that most of us were unaware of its medical uses. We were simply opposed to the arrests, and is something that we have been and continue to do is oppose arresting people for non-medical use as well. But they really are separate issues, in the sense that no one would argue that having morphine available, for example, by prescription for pain is the same thing as arguing that people should be allowed to use opiates recreationally. They really are separate arguments. And having something available by prescription is in no way proves that it is safe or appropriate for use by young people especially, but for anybody else. So that intellectually they're quite separate. Politically, we're not the ones who tied them together. They have been tied together by the prohibitionists, not by us. That the idea, what I mean, I think that a lot of the prohibitionists are afraid to have a lot of people using it medically for fear that some of their more extreme claims will be recognized as being lies, rather. But I think that they really are intellectually quite separate arguments. I think that it is really criminal to have people who have serious medical problems denied access to anything that would alleviate their suffering.
Very good. We actually are getting some more calls. I forgot we were taking callers live, and the phones were ringing away, and we were just letting them ring. let's take some more callers.
Sure.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi. Welcome to Insights from Beyond.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to make a point. First of all, I thought that lady made a very good point in saying that the audience that you have here is predominantly religious, conservative, people who never tried marijuana, aren't interested in trying it, and I don't think they should get the wrong idea, okay?
Absolutely.
I read articles here and there in various different magazines, and they're not lying, like he says. And I mean, how many of these illegitimate mothers are having all kinds of crazy kids because they're addicted to marijuana? It's a potent drug. I mean, this is not something that everybody should just go taking. I know every once in a while he reminds people that the guest of yours keeps, basically he's saying marijuana's great, marijuana's terrific. And every once in a while I say, oh, well, I'm not advocating it. But on the other hand, he keeps on saying things that don't give that message. I don't believe that police just go around jailing people because they smoke marijuana. They were doing something that they shouldn't have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Besides smoking marijuana, they've been doing things that either they stole to get it, they've done something,
mm-hmm.
or they robbed. Police just don't pick up people. As a matter of fact, they're not picking up enough people. They're not just picking up somebody because they smoke. They picked up people.
I wish you were right. I wish you were right.
Yeah.
I don't buy that. All I can tell you is that it's going on. That, like I say, that all over the country, people are being arrested. Like Americans arrested every 2 minutes on marijuana charges.
Well, that is though, because there is quite a big population in the country,
uh-huh.
though, and a lot of the arrests are going on in inner city areas where the crime rate is high in general, and also probably, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Cowan, as our caller is mentioning, aren't some of those arrests also perhaps secondary to some other reason for questioning?
Well, undoubtedly some of them are, but...
You said in their homes, what are they knocking on doors to see if people are taking it, or like, what are they doing? How are they arresting them?
Well, they knock down people's doors. I mean...
What?
What,
they're knocking down people's doors?
Yeah.
Not in suburban areas so much. I mean, not without you are speaking more about problem cases where they have that they have that bent because of usually some other reasons, aren't you, Mr. Cowan?
No, I mean, this is so hard to believe. I mean, when the stuff that is going on in this country, and it is not being reported, and so that your suburban listener who has a religious conservative background thinks that the police are there simply to protect them, and my background is I have never, when you look like I do, I'm a middle-aged, bald-headed, business type. The police are never even rude to me, so. I was very naive about this thing. I thought the same thing that your caller thought, is that this couldn't be. That the things that people get arrested for marijuana charges, oh, sure, yeah, but this was in conjunction with an arrest for robbery or murder or something or other. But, I got involved in this thing, that I am just on a daily basis just constantly amazed at this thing. And I'm talking
very
about people...
Amazed. because I can't. I mean, this is. I mean, everyone's talking about how there's not enough police on the street. They don't just start going knock. They're not even allowed to, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense that police.
I know.
Well, what is? What
is?
What knocking on doors? Do you take marijuana? I mean.
You're right in that the point that Mr. Pat Cowan's making should not be taken out of perspective, but he is pointing to a problem in society and the laws and the legal system in general, which leaves room for the police to act this way, especially if not everyone is 100%, not every fireman is 100%, not every store owner, not any policeman. We see that, you know, there were problems in the Los Angeles riots. I mean, certainly, I don't want to start into that issue because there are a lot of sides to it. But we know there were a lot of resignations in the police department, and there were court trials and whatnot. And there's a lot of stress on the job, you know, for a policeman especially. He's in a lot of danger, and he's uptight a lot, and there's a lot of stress. And sometimes the excuse of, you know, having the law behind you can certainly be a reason to act on it and to throw the book, quote unquote, at somebody and to really exaggerate the real the real purpose of why he is being paid his salary. Again, that's why I directed the focus towards the legal issues, in that does the government innately have the right? We have to abide by the laws of the country, as you know, that's part of our religion. But we also it creates a resentment if the laws are not right.
Can I say something for a second? By the way, I just wanted to mention that my father told me, I forgot exactly where it is in the Gemara, but it says in the Gemara specifically about being addicted to any kind, any drug. Drugs are a very old thing, okay?
Right. I believe Rav Chia says in Pesachim, it was at Tzivor, that he told his son not to use samim, not to use drugs or any type of medicine, actually. Any type of medicine, in that there would be no end to it.
Right.
And it's a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up. It actually...
I just can't believe that police just go around jailing people because they just take marijuana. They can't even do it.
Well, in a sense, it is a side issue. It's one issue of what normal is undoubtedly dealing with. But, you know, the underlying legal structure is really a more formidable and significant problem in that it's leaving loopholes and it's leaving... problems with the law and human nature in terms of human, I'm not advocating anyone to use this or any other substance, really, but what I'm trying to bring out here is that the law has some problems with it, and that it's, I feel that the law is trying to protect us from ourselves, and if we try to treat adults as children all the time, but we take away their innate rights, the right to express themselves, then it creates a desire also. It's a catch-22 in that it perpetuates a desire that might not be even there in the first place. And then that, you see, Rab Chia, or maybe I'm wrong about exactly the Lushan in the Chazal, but the Chazal, this teaching from the Talmud is saying that we have the right to choose. He's saying... that we should choose good, but in essence, to a law-abiding citizen, doesn't have that choice because legally he doesn't have the opportunity, and not that we should put ourselves in temptation either. Certainly there should be.
Certainly not tempted, but I mean, you know, I don't see what the point is if they would. I mean, it's like this is a very broad issue. What about what about car seat? The car seat issue. A lot of people don't feel like putting their kids into car seats for whatever reason. They want to take it on their hands, and they don't feel the government should intervene with that.
That's
either.
That's an excellent point. How do you respond to that, Mr. Cowan?
Well, the business of, you know, in the case of children with car seats, you're actually asking whether or not parents' degree of control over their own children they should have. But there is at least a third party. There's somebody else involved in the thing. That is, the idea is to protect the child. But if you have an adult who is by himself, herself, then what a person does in the privacy of their home, that there should be a very compelling state reason before the police interfere in something like that. And this is something that that what I'm talking about here is the extension of the state power or down over control over an individual's life where the state really does not have a compelling reason. And again, I'm in Charlottesville, Virginia right now, which is where Thomas Jefferson's from, but in Washington, the Jefferson Memorial, the largest inscription on the Jefferson Memorial is, "I have sworn on the altar of God eternal hostility against all forms of tyranny over the mind of man." And, you know, basically, it is the idea is that if you don't control your own mind, if the government has the power over your own mind, what do you have control over? And that there really needs to be a very compelling state reason before we extend the power of the state to be able to reach into people's lives and do it. I mean, the idea is, you know, that your caller, I understand, I once believed that myself. I couldn't imagine that the police would be doing the things that they're doing. But they're doing it, believe me. And like I said, we've arrested over 9 million Americans. And I know a lot of people personally who've been arrested on marijuana charges who are very, very decent, law-abiding citizens otherwise. They're peaceful people who only want to be left alone. And some of them, by the way, have serious medical problems, and they were using it as medication. They were not using it for fun. And they have lost their homes as a result of this, and they have been put in prison and given very strong drugs in prison.
It's probably also the main reason that that the Supreme Court nominated Robert Bork was also declined from the position, and that he was open about his casual usage, I believe, about marijuana.
It was Ginsburg.
It was Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm. Although Clarence Thomas said that he smoked pot while he was at Yale Law School.
I don't think it's such a simple thing. It's not like you're controlling everybody's minds. I mean, this is something that obviously does have a lot of side effects to the average person. I mean, to anybody who uses it. But
does it?
Of course it does.
How do you know?
Well, wait. Let's keep that issue aside, because there are so many other parallels where there's inconsistencies in the law between a lot of standard allopathic drugs promoted by the American Medical Association, and that's a whole other topic there, in terms that if somebody who is licensed to practice medicine chooses to go on his own way of dealing, his own theories in medicine after he's licensed, theoretically he has that option. Yet according to AMA strictures, if anyone goes keep to the straight and narrow, then they can have their license taken away. And these are people that are qualified to practice medicine, yet a lot of medicine has side effects that are certainly analogous to whatever possible side effects. And I'm not saying that they're only theoretical. There certainly probably are. I don't want to deal with that issue so much. That there's inconsistency there. It's impossible to deal with a law like that consistently and deal with other substances with the same consistency.
Well, in fact, of course, all drugs have side effects in the sense that, for example, as I said, a lot of people who try marijuana don't like it. So that, you might say, that is a side effect in the sense that they find it unpleasant, whereas other people find it pleasant. But there really is, however, a very important distinction between the medical use of something and a doctor's ability to prescribe it. Because I see a doctor can prescribe morphine, but he can't prescribe marijuana. And I don't think your caller would like it if she ended up in the hospital in pain, and this is, doctor, she's giving something for the pain, and the doctor says, "Oh no, I can't do that because that this is not a good thing for children to use. This could have side effects. Why people ruin their lives with opiates? Of course they do." So I mean, these are really intellectually and legally and morally, I think, quite separate issues. But the fact of the matter is that it is the prohibitionists who put who place this restriction on it. And
well, it's a broad thing. I mean, how much control the government should have on
right. That's the area we're discussing. I'm sorry, we have to take a break. Call it.
Okay.
We didn't get your name. If you want to tell us who you were, otherwise, yes.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
We'll be right back after a quick break. The Insights from Beyond, we don't have much to welcome you back to in terms of what's left of our show. I want to thank Mr. Cowan for being with us. He's the national director of National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, and he's brought some very interesting points. Again, thank you for being with us, Mr. Cowan. Maybe you'll be back again sometime on our show.
Thank you, David. We're, by the way, let me say we're in Washington, D.C., 1001 Connecticut Avenue, Suite 1010, Washington 20036, if anybody wants to get in touch with us.
Okay, we appreciate hearing that. I was going to ask you also.
Indeed. Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Okay, it was a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you.
Good night.